Today, on this episode of the PeerDirect Special Spotlight.
Let's move on and talk about some interesting findings from a real-world analysis that you were involved with of lysocaptagene marilucil, or lysocel, in heavily pretreated patients. So maybe you could tell us about that trial.
Today, Drs. Weird and O'Brien joined the podcast to discuss CLL and ASH 2025, CAR T-cell therapy and data on vaccination and cancer screening in this PeerDirect Specialist Spotlight. All opinions expressed are those of the presenters and do not necessarily reflect the views of this educational initiative's supporters.
Hello, I'm Dr. William Weirda, Professor of Medicine in the Department of Leukemia at the University of Texas MD Anderson Cancer Center in Houston.
And I'm Dr. Susan O'Brien, Professor of Medicine in the Division of Hematology Oncology at the University of California Irvine School of Medicine.
Thanks for joining me, Susan.
It's my pleasure to be here, Bill. Okay, let's move on and talk about some interesting findings from a real-world analysis that you were involved with of lysocaptagene marilucil, or lysocel, in heavily pretreated patients. So maybe you could tell us about that trial.
I'd be happy to. This is a real-world experience with lysocel for patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia, relapsed, refractory. As it comes with all of the caveats of a real-world report where if they're reporting on complete responses, I think the clarification has to be confirmed complete response, because a complete response, as you know, requires a bone marrow biopsy, and not all of these patients had a bone marrow biopsy. So, and this cohort of patients wasn't selected for or managed with a rigor that's done on a clinical trial. So again, the real world aspect of it we need to preference the discussion with the real world aspect of a study. There were 30 previously treated patients with CLL enrolled in the study. Most of them had to have prior BTK inhibitor and BCL2 inhibitor. That's consistent with the label for lysocel in CLL, and the reported complete response and unconfirmed complete response rate was 60%, and the overall response rate was 83%. As I'm sure you're familiar with the data that we presented for the Transcend CLL-004 trial, in that trial of patients who were, again, double exposed, similar to this cohort, the complete remission rate by the independent review committee was 20%. And so the complete response rate, again, is reported higher for this cohort, but some of those were not confirmed complete responses by virtue of having a bone marrow. We, on the Transcend CLL-004 trial with monotherapy lysocel, reported a high undetectable MRD rate. What was reported on this real-world experience was a undetectable MRD4 rate by flow cytometry of 64%, and by NGS, it was 41%, presumably UMRD6. The toxicities that were reported were consistent with what one would expect with this strategy of treatment. CRS, or cytokine release syndrome, was reported for 87% of the patients, with grade 3 or higher occurring in 10%. If I recall correctly from the Transcend study, it was about 8%. And ICANS was reported all grades in 40% of the patients, and grade 3 or greater was reported as 13%. And there were no grade 4 or higher CRS or ICANS events. Those data are consistent with, in terms of toxicity, with what we reported for in the Transcend CLL-004 trial. The efficacy, though, is different. And 90% of the patients are alive at a median of 3.3 months. And I think the most notable aspect of this, in my opinion, was the fact that they didn't limit the addition of a BTK inhibitor to the lysocel in terms of treatment. And pirtobrutinib was used as a bridging agent, and patients could continue pirtobrutinib through treatment. And we have reported on the Transcend CLL-004 trial also our results with ibrutinib plus lysocel, showing a higher response rate with the addition of ibrutinib to lysocel in that in that report. No significant difference in toxicity, but it, my opinion is that it is a higher response rate when you add a BTK inhibitor to the lysosomal-based therapy.
Well, this would certainly suggest that, since we know that in the clinical trial, the CR rate was actually only 20%. So this was three times higher. The other thing I did notice in the patient characteristics, which might have contributed, I thought, was that the tumor bulk was not very high in this trial, because you had previously presented in the original trial that the tumor bulk was a definite predictor of the CR rate. And here, I think about 80% of the patients had a lymph node. Their largest lymph node was less than five centimeters. So don't you think that could have also contributed to the higher CR rate here?
Absolutely. So bulk of disease correlated with likelihood to achieve a complete remission. So was the number of prior treatments. And so I think that's also a factor. And I clearly believe that there is a need for this treatment for our patients with CLL. Unfortunately, in the Transcend CLL-004 trial, it was relegated to the last resort treatment for patients who went on that early trial, and they were very heavily pretreated, and they had a large bulk of disease and active disease at the time of treatment. And my opinion with working with this treatment is that it works better if you give it in an earlier line of therapy and in less bulky disease. And also, I like to use a BTK inhibitor with lysosomal.
Okay, so your group also presented an insightful cohort analysis looking at trends in vaccination and cancer screening among more than 1,000 patients with CLL. Could you review some of these findings, Bill?
I'd be happy to. So Dr. Ferrioli does a lot of work with looking at the incidence of second cancers and the incidence of infection among patients with chronic lymphocytic leukemia. I don't know about you, but in my practice, I spend a lot more time talking about screening for second cancers and also the need for diligent vaccination for infection prevention, because our patients are doing great with our targeted therapies. And it's the infections and the second cancers that are becoming more of an issue for our patient population than they have in the past. So this was an analysis of over a thousand patients and what the vaccination patterns were recently. Now, we're coming out of the era of COVID, so there was a lot of focus on COVID vaccinations. We saw a peak of COVID vaccination. I believe that was in 2002, and then the incidence has been tapering off. And during that time, we did see a decrease in the number of patients that received the other vaccinations, influenza, pneumococcal pneumonia, shingles vaccination. And I think that was predominantly because of the focus on COVID. We also saw less influenza infections during that era that we were struggling with COVID-19, because, in my opinion, because patients were wearing masks, everybody was wearing masks. And so we weren't passing around the other viruses, and people were very diligent also about hand washing. And so I think these patterns illustrate what's happened COVID and post-COVID. I would expect those trends to change a bit more in the future, where we're seeing less focus and emphasis on the COVID vaccination and returning more to sort of our endemic challenges of influenza, pneumococcal pneumonia, herpes virus reactivation, VZV reactivation, and the need for vaccination against those agents. We're still seeing a good compliance, I think, with COVID vaccination boosters, but there's less attention to that than there had been in the past. And then with regard to screening for other cancers, we've seen an increase actually in compliance with annual mammography and screening by colonoscopy for colon cancer. And we spend a lot of time talking about patients being screened for skin cancers. And that's a very important part of the screening algorithm for our patients. In terms of screening for men, PSA is important, annual PSA check. Now that, I think, is becoming a controversial topic in general, but we do emphasize the importance of prostate cancer screening. We see a lower rate in African Americans compared to our Caucasian population. But that also is an important screening modality to emphasize for our patient population.
I can't agree with you more that because we have such great therapies for CLL, vaccination, infection prevention, and screening for second tumors becomes even more important than it ever used to be, because as you said, those are the things that are going to have an impact on the mortality. We know now that patients with CLL can live, as long as they're older patients, they can live as long as age-adjusted controls with the current therapy we have. But so those are the areas that we have to concentrate on. So thank you, Bill. I appreciate your insights on these intriguing ASH abstracts.
Thank you, Susan.
And thank you to our audience. Please watch the additional videos in this series, where we'll explore more CLL news from ASH 2025.
And that's today's special spotlight. Thank you for joining us for this episode of PeerDirect Medical News Podcast. For more stories like these, visit us at peerdirect.com. Thoughts, comments, or suggestions? Please leave us a review on your preferred listening platform or email us at editorial@peerdirect.com. Listen and subscribe on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts. You can also download our Amazon Alexa Flash Briefing Medical News Roundup and just ask, "What's my flash briefing?" Thanks today to our guests, Drs. Weird and O'Brien. Join me next time for the episode where we cover the latest stories in the world of medicine.